Welcome to the Far Middle Podcast. This is Nick Deolius. Thank you for joining, Constant Listener. Episode 56. I think the toughest decision, perhaps, in the dedication in Far Middle Podcast history. That's because the number 56 is tied to two greats, either epic people or things in sports. And I've been torn on this one for days as to which one to choose the dedication for. So what to do? Well, in the end, I have to go with the person who was the greatest ever at his position, maybe the best ever on his side of the ball, and certainly an all-time great. I also think this person is an interesting dedication, an appropriate one for this episode, because of some of the themes that we're going to talk about in episode 56 of The Far Middle when it comes to talent, potential sort of setting things up, but only get you so far. It really needs to come down to grabbing a hold of that potential, utilizing that talent with great personal decision-making. So with all that in mind, episode 56 is going to go to LT, or Lawrence Taylor. He was the greatest outside linebacker without a doubt, and that's coming from somebody here who is an enormous Jack Ham fan. And as great as Jack Ham was in his day, Lawrence Taylor was even better. He was the greatest defensive player, arguably, and there are experts that argue that he was the greatest ever on the defensive side of the ball, and maybe the greatest college football player ever, again, arguably, for those that consider themselves experts in the arena of college football. He went to North Carolina, was a Tar Heel. He was a first-round pick by the Giants in 1981. He was the second pick overall in that draft. So who went first? Who was the first overall pick in the 81 draft? Heisman winner George Rogers, who was selected by the New Orleans Saints right before Lawrence Taylor. And he was the first, and I think still the only player, to win the NFL Defensive Player of the Year in his rookie season. He ended up doing that three times in his career, winning NFL Defensive Player of the Year, and he was league MVP once as well. Now, if you want to come up with a word that best describes Lawrence Taylor, that word would be disruptive. He changed schemes on both sides of the ball in the NFL, and don't take it from me, take it from an NFL great, a coach who would know, John Madden. John Madden said, Lawrence Taylor defensively has had as big of an impact as any player I've ever seen. He changed the way defense is played, the way pass rushing is played, the way linebackers play, and the way offenses block linebackers. He was also tough, like Mike Webster, who we dedicated episode 52 for a few weeks back. LT played hurt often. That was one of the aspects of his greatness, and he wasn't afraid to have to incur some pain to be able to play. And he thrived on the field, of course, but he struggled with issues off of the field, which I sort of alluded to a couple of seconds ago. And that's the real world, right? That's how things sometimes work in life. There's what you do on the field or what you do at work in your career, but then you also have to be able to navigate and manage your way successfully through the personal side of life. He had drug issues. He was suspended for failed drug tests through his career. He was arrested numerous times. So he wasn't exactly a role model off the field, but maybe there is a lesson when you assess his greatness on the field and the challenges with turning that into successes in life. Sometimes those two things don't, one doesn't necessarily guarantee the other. They both require work. And that, I think, is a great segue into the theme that I really want to focus episode 56 on this week, and that is the CNX Foundation Mentorship Academy. The Academy just wrapped its first inaugural year with a graduation ceremony at the start of June, which makes this a really good time to reflect on what was achieved and accomplished that past year. So maybe a little bit of perspective first. If you go back to the beginning, the genesis of the Mentorship Academy came out of a combination of frustration and wanting to do something about it. That's really the two things that drove the whole creation and beginning of the Mentorship Academy. And the foundation was rooted in that frustration with respect to what our political leaders and institutions and policies were doing effectively to the youth and young adults of Western Pennsylvania when it came to things like career paths and realizing personal potential, particularly for those not wanting to pursue college right out of high school. It seemed as if the powers that be do everything they can to stymie and stifle these promising young men and women from realizing their true potential. And the wanting to do something about it, you know, came from looking around, seeing the failures and how the entrenched power bases were making things sometimes worse, speaking up about it, and at some point deciding to hit the button to do something about it instead of waiting for things to get better on their own. Because you reach the point where you realize if you're going to wait for it, for things to improve, that is, you could end up waiting a very, very long time indeed. So myself and the team that I work with, we started to think and we started to tinker and to play what ifs. And here were the results of the what ifs that we formulated as a potential blueprint for something successful that ended up being the underlying tenets and foundational design components of the CNX Foundation Mentorship Academy. So the first thing we came up with was the year would basically run concurrent with the school year. So we're looking at something that would start in an August time period and then late May, early June, which is exactly what we ended up developing. Age-wise, we wanted to target high school seniors and juniors. For the juniors, the intention would be to have them participate in two full Mentorship Academy years. So that first year, their junior year, they would then replicate and repeat with another, a second go-around, so to speak, for their senior year. And we would want to run a female and a male class concurrently with essentially the same curriculum and events. Class size, you know, that was something that we spent a lot of time debating. We needed that Goldilocks class size. We didn't want something too small because you lose impact, right, if you don't reach enough individuals and students. But we didn't want a class size that was too large because you lose the ability to personally connect and make those interconnections. No, we needed and we were looking for just right. And after a lot of discussion, we landed at around 20 females and 20 males as the initial class sizes. I think that was a fortuitous decision because you look back after a year, it ended up being perfect. And that's recognizing that each session or event that we held, it wouldn't always typically hold the full 20 students because of schedule conflicts and logistics and things like that. Now, we wanted to find students who were focused and attentive, but didn't want to pursue college or didn't plan to pursue college right out of high school. Those are the types of students who can deliver massive value to society and to economies for themselves, but that the system, with its trillions of dollars in funding and expert classes extraordinaire, it seems to completely leave behind and ignore. That's where we could make a difference, especially in a region like Appalachia and Western Pennsylvania, where there will be many awesome career paths to pursue that don't require college degrees or the college debt that goes with college. And we thought carefully about where we would recruit these students from. We wanted a rough 50-50 split between urban and rural districts in Western Pennsylvania around the Pittsburgh area. And people ask me all the time, why did you have that desire for the 50-50 split between urban and rural? And why urban and rural? Why not suburban? Well, a couple of reasons. First, I think I've talked about this in the past, a unique aspect of this region is that you experience a full spectrum from urban to suburban to rural in the region in less than a 30-minute drive. That is something that's unique. That's something special. You don't see that everywhere. As an example, just to give you a perspective, I'm sitting in a suburban office park south of Pittsburgh right now as I'm recording this. And within 30 minutes, I am in downtown Pittsburgh if I drive north. And within 30 minutes, I am in the most rural areas you'll find in Appalachia if I drive south. And we wanted to tap into that unique aspect of this region with the Mentorship Academy. Second, there is a strong correlation of underserved communities to urban and rural school districts. And a key design trait of the academy was to exclusively target the underserved communities and students within them, provide the path to the middle class, and then watch those students blaze the trail down that road. So that's where we did our recruiting. And that's not to say there aren't deserving students or ones in need in suburban districts. There certainly are. And we had a few in this year's class, but the primary focus and attention would be on the urban and the rural, most in need, biggest bang for the buck, best returns. And then third and last, you know, this 50-50 urban-rural split, it sort of lent itself, tied itself to this vision that I had. And maybe it was silly or naive, but one where these students would come together once a month for a day, interact with fellow students that had little in common with them other than their age, and that they never would have gotten to know but for the academy. And I got to tell you, that aspect worked wonderfully. I have to say that in hindsight, it was a huge success with that aspect in particular. And we are definitely keeping sort of that characteristic of the formula for this coming year's class when we start things up again at the end of summer. And last but not least, we had to talk about and figure out as a team how we were going to define success with the effort and how we would measure it. I've always been big on those things, both in life and in business, maybe to a fault. But you know, too many endeavors and efforts in business and elsewhere, they have the best of intentions in the beginning, but they fall short or they fail because leaders don't think through what defines winning or what defines achieving what goal and what metrics you look to for scoreboard status. If you want to know what the score is, how you're doing, what are the metrics that you're going to look to and can you measure them? So for the Mentorship Academy, we look to a few key metrics to guide us on judging efficacy and success. We wanted to look at student retention in a program over the year. Now, we lost a student here or there, but overall, 90%+ retention was what we enjoyed. And like Woody Allen said, 80% of success in life is showing up. Not that we should emulate Woody Allen in life, but you get the point. Now, at the end of the year, the students walking away with having built tangible tools for career development, that would be another measurable metric that would define efficacy and success. So what am I talking about when I say walking away with having built tangible tools for career development? Well, I'm talking about a resume, and a resume that had substance and was worked on and improved over the course of that year. A LinkedIn account would be another type of a metric or a measurable tangible tool. Having a few mock interviews under your belt as a student would be something that would be very valuable. And again, mission accomplished on all those for our students, some of which I'll talk about a little more in a minute. Another metric that we wanted to look to was CNX being in a position to hire some of the students when the class wrapped and the summer came. So I wanted to be able to look at this as a measure of success by saying, would the company that I work for, CNX Resources, be confident enough and willing enough to hire a number of these students to make them a productive part of the team to help us execute and win our business strategy? And I'm happy to report we're doing just that, with somewhere between 4 to 6 students hopefully joining our team in a matter of days. Now, what slots would they be joining? You know, what areas would they be working in? External affairs, operations, working with some of our partners very closely, maintaining our midstream and water assets, deploying and operating technology in the arena of preventive maintenance, stuff that matters to us successfully executing our business plan. These are important positions and jobs. And we would also, when we're thinking about success, we'd want to see partners, other companies who worked with us and collaborated with us on the Mentorship Academy, hiring students coming out of the academy. And we enjoy seeing that as well. Students being considered for a number of the building trades is an example. An electric industry global giant that partnered with us wanting to hire some students. Service providers in the domestic energy industry that partnered with us recruiting these students and so on. So I think that has been very positive to see as a major success. And we would want the juniors that were in the program to display a high hit rate of return for a second year in the academy as seniors. And, you know, still a little early here in late June to make that assessment coming into August, but I'm confident I think we will enjoy that as well based on the preliminary feedback that I've heard. Now, despite my love for all things measurable, I will acknowledge there is a big intangible component to all this. I get that. I understand that. Knew that going in. And you will know whether you've been successful in the intangibles when you see it. You'll feel it. And the intangible sense that I have of the success of the program is off the charts. These students are way more confident than when they came in. They're much more focused. They're now all friends and colleagues. I'm attached to them. The wider team became attached to them. And this component, sort of this intangible, measurable, it's something you'd feel and sense versus being able to measure or weigh, this component or aspect of it blew past all of my expectations. And when you look back at the overall year and what some of the key crucial ingredients for success were, you know, what drove the tangible and the intangible successes that we saw, that we experienced, it goes down to a few key stakeholders in that sort of recipe or that formula. Certainly the CNX Foundation providing the resources to get this done and its board of directors, that was a pivotal thing, right? The resources are a necessary prerequisite requirement to coming up with this type of an effort. There were two other just key sort of contributors in particular. One were these partner companies, entities that worked alongside us. We approached them early on before the first academic year with respect to the Mentorship Academy even started in August of last year. And we said, here's the conceptual. We've got a ton of things to figure out. We don't know if this is going to be a success. Are you in with us? And, you know, gratefully, from my perspective, and thankfully, just a slew of partners said, we're in. Let's give it a go. And who am I talking about? I'm talking about entities in the domestic energy industry. So I'm talking about Deep Well Services, who are awesome and unbelievable up there in Zelianople, Pennsylvania. That's just a behemoth giant with respect to oil field services. Evolution Well Services, that are revolutionizing completions technologies with electric frac spreads and whatnot. They were awesome to work with, did a great job with the students, opening their eyes to careers in domestic energy. Ferry Electric, a local Western Pennsylvania company that's basically an electrical contractor, multi-generational. They stepped up to the plate along with a partner of theirs, which was Eaton Corporation. Eaton, of course, is a global giant in the electrical field and industry. They basically turned loose their innovation center just north of Pittsburgh to the students, and that just completely impressed each and every one of them. It's one of the most impressive training facilities and educational facilities I've seen in some time, to say the least. We had individuals like Chef Claudie down at the EAT Initiative, who's located in the Energy Innovation Center in downtown Pittsburgh, who has a knife skills to life skills workshop that he puts together that basically talks about and instructs on everything from food insecurity to kitchen skills with professional careers in the culinary arts, where you get accredited and you're able to turn that certificate loose to obtain some really meaningful employment in that field if that's the type of career path that you enjoy. The Pittsburgh Penguins were great to deal with, where they basically welcomed us in and sort of showed us behind the scenes what it's like, what it takes, what types of careers are necessary to put a game night on. And then they invited us to stay for the game afterward that evening, along with their partners that make the arena run, like Aramark and AEG. We work with Bettis Brothers and what they're doing across their range of different ventures with Bettis Brothers Industries. And then I mentioned earlier the building trades. You know, the local regional building trades have been unbelievable partners to work with in this. Steam fitters in Western Pennsylvania, the iron workers were great. So the steam fitters had the students at one of our first sessions basically welding for the first time in their lives, which really was a great experience. They still talk about it to this day. And I think we're going to have a few steam fitters come out of this graduating class. The iron workers were awesome. They allowed the students to take a shot at what it would be like climbing some iron as an iron worker. Electrical workers that were at the event at Eaton and Ferry Electric. The operating engineers, just a tremendous team there, where we went out to their training facility and the students were operating some heavy equipment and some cranes to feel and sense what that would be like as a career. And then the carpenters, you know, they spent the day with us basically showing us all the different types of specific sort of jobs, careers, professions within the Carpenters Union. So this year would never have been the success that it was without those entities that I just named taking the time out to, if nothing else, highlight the career opportunities that are awaiting these students in Western Pennsylvania, and doing it with an enthusiasm, because you saw and heard from people who just didn't do that for a career profession, but just had a love and a passion for what they were doing. And then there were the two regional community colleges that we worked with. They played a pivotal role in this inaugural class. Here I'm talking about the Community College of Beaver County, CCBC, which does a lot of work, invested a lot of resources into training the next generation of workers to staff places like the Shell cracker facility out there in Monaca, Pennsylvania. And Shell was a great partner with us as well for that day, sort of giving us an overview of what the cracker facility was and the petrochemical facility looked like and what types of careers you could expect within it. We heard from a lot of workers at Shell at CCBC. And then, of course, Community College of Allegheny County being the county that Pittsburgh is located within, or what's known as CCAC. Everybody at CCAC, from Dr. Bullock, the president, on through to Dr. Vlad, who's in charge basically of student affairs and student life, tremendous job, not just talking to the kids about the role in terms of how academics can play a role in the career path under some of these different professions, but also working with a number of individual students who said, you know what, I want to pursue some of these career paths in conjunction and parallel with taking courses at a community college towards an associate degree and ultimately a four-year degree. So these community colleges, you know, I went into this effort, I think a lot of you know this, really liking community colleges, thinking they're the academic institutions that actually get it when it comes to life skills, the student being the customer, the client, and, you know, a great rate of return for a reasonable investment when it comes to tuition. Now I love them. After a year of this and seeing what these institutions do, they need more resources. They need more support than what they're getting because they are just instant rate of return and bang for the buck. These community colleges, CCBC, CCAC in Western Pennsylvania and probably beyond, they are regional crown jewels to say the least. Now, another key ingredient to the formula or the recipe of success for the Mentorship Academy was the mentors themselves. And these were individuals, we probably had about 8 to 10 of them in total, that basically stepped up, invested their time in spending more one-on-one time with individual students or small groups of students. And this was effectively the glue of the Mentorship Academy effort, especially between the official sessions or events. So if we would meet, say, once per month with the class, there was all that time in between and just checking in with the students, helping them assess different career paths, you know, maybe talking to them about what's going on in life, that type of thing, just had a tremendous outsized impact on the overall success of the effort. And if you know, we went in thinking the mentors were going to be crucial to this when it all started, we've got absolute conviction that that's the case going into year number two. And you can't get enough when it comes to the mentorship support, at least from my perspective and my experience over the past year. Now, we also went through a little bit of a compare and contrast when we had all the students together for the graduation ceremony at the start of June. And you know what we told them was the reason we're all here this evening in the beginning was because of you, the students. The why as to why we were doing this in the middle of the overall year of the Mentorship Academy was because of you, the students, and why we were here that evening on the graduation celebration was the same reason. It was because of the students. And if you were just thinking, going back to those intangibles that I spoke about on how you would monitor, measure, weigh success of the effort, I sort of gave them a compare and contrast of what those look like before the Mentorship Academy program and after. And it was things like, you know, before, demeanor with heads down, not the most communicative group in the world, somewhat quiet, right, hesitant. But today, what do you've got? You've got heads up, they're held high, they're expressive, basically making a very strong first impression when they come across somebody new. And that's something that I think the Mentorship Academy helped play a role in. Back then, a lot of anxiety with students, some apprehension. But now when you see them, cautiously confident. And one of the things that we emphasize to them is that term cautiously confident, because they've got confidence, but it's not confidence bordering on arrogance. It's cautiously confident. And their ability to keep that balance in life is going to be something that I think will serve them very well through the years. And we talked about how they initially were unaware of who they could be professionally. They really didn't know. And of course, that was a key objective of the Mentorship Academy. But now they're very self-aware of options in front of them. Back then, they didn't maybe know what opportunity sat within the region for them beyond what was in their immediate sort of area of their home or school, that type of thing. But now they've got eyes wide open on career paths all over the region of Western Pennsylvania. They now know they've got a very good idea what's out there waiting for them and which paths they're going to want to pursue. Back then, when we started all this, I remember the day we talked about a resume for the first time, half the students looked at me and said, "What's a resume?" And if you look at them now, they've got resumes, but more importantly, they've got awesome resumes. They got resumes, frankly, that individuals 5, 10, some instances 15 years older than them would actually be jealous of. And I think they're the resumes of these students in the Mentorship Academy, because they've been working on them at least through the course of the last 6 months of the program. There's something that's not a one and done deal. There's something that's worked on and continually improved over time. You know, when we started, these students had a very limited network when it came to knowing regional players, knowing people that could open doors for them, make a phone call for them, send an email for them, get them an interview with somebody. Now, you know, these students have a regional network that would make a professional with way more years of experience in this region envious. The people and entities that these students know now that will vouch for them, that will open a door for them, it's about as good as it gets when it comes to, you know, sort of embarking on the start of your career path. And back then when we started, the students largely were reactive and they were waiting for to be told what was next, what we're going to do next. Now they are proactive, they're first movers, they're effectively leaders at a very young age, and that's good to see. And then, you know, sort of one of the hidden jewels of this effort that I'm really happy to see, back then when we started, the individual students really didn't know one another. There might have been an exception where one student knew another one because they went to the same school or they played on the same sports team, that type of thing. But by and large, a student went into the mentorship academy to start being a stranger to all the other students and vice versa. And what you see now is a close-knit group of friends that keep in constant contact with one another. I hope, my expectation is that years down the road, 20 years from now, these students will still be talking to one another and helping each other sort of navigate through life's twists and turns. So we hold this graduation event. We do this compare and contrast for the students, with the students and their families in attendance. It was great to see all the families show up to see their students sort of receive their diploma. And after we presented the diploma to each student for getting through the mentorship academy, we also gave them a memento. You know, one of those Lucite type of mementos that you can put on a shelf. And it had the individual student's name on it, but there was also a simple sentence on that memento. And it was by a person that we've talked about in prior Far Middle podcasts, and I've talked about it in my book, Precipice, The Left's Campaign to Destroy America. That individual is Immanuel Kant. And of course, he was the starter, the catalyst for the Enlightenment. But he came up with a very simple sentence that in many ways I've taken on almost as a personal credo through the years, which is to be is to do, right? So this whole concept of doers and achievement and going out and toiling to achieve and to do, and how society and economies depend on the doers, right? Themes that we've talked about for a long time on the Far Middle podcast, that basically goes back to something like that motto, to be is to do, by Kant. And I thought that that would be maybe not just a great credo for an individual such as myself or for a region like Western Pennsylvania, which basically adopted that view, to be is to do, and then took it upon itself, became a fabric component of the region. The region built the country. The region helped build the world. But it might also be an appropriate motto for that individual student as they start on their journey professionally through life. So I wanted to share that to be is to do statement by Immanuel Kant to offer it up on the Far Middle listeners, because I know that the students certainly enjoyed it when they were presented with it. Now, you know, some people were asking me through that evening, why did you want to participate in something like this or build something like this? And then, you know, there's the follow-on question of why am I talking about this in episode 56 of the Far Middle podcast? Well, two reasons. I'll answer them, you know, both those questions individually with two reasons and two rationale. First, as I said before, I've lived my entire life in Western Pennsylvania. It's a great region. It's an awesome place. And I've worked for a single company my entire career since I've been a working adult. And both of those choices go back in the end to a love of the people that constitute the region and or the company. And my view of that is if you really love the people and you love the region and you love the company or the industry that's a key part of the region, you've got a duty at some point as you get further along in your career to find a way to reinvest and develop some opportunities and pathways that better that region and the people within it. So to me, it was very consistent with my passion and love for the region and the people within it at large. And it proved out to be entirely consistent with that thought. It's something that actually proved out to be right. So mission accomplished from my perspective personally. With respect to why I'm talking about it on the Far Middle podcast, my hope and the hope of the wider team that's worked on and built this mentorship academy is that we will scale it, that it will be copied, that there will be people and entities and companies that want to join us so that we can have a bigger outsized impact on these rural urban communities, the students, the young adults within them, and sort of, again, providing the paths to the middle class and then watching them go off and tear down that path on their own accord for their own benefit. So if you are interested, whether you're in Western Pennsylvania or beyond, whether you're a company or an individual, whether you want to participate in the Mentorship Academy, whether you want to copy it, you know, we've open coded, open sourced this thing so that it can be copied. We laid it all out. All the cards are on the table. I encourage you to do so. And if you want any feedback, you know, from my end or from our end as to what worked, what we were challenged with, all the twists and turns, happy to share that in a very transparent manner. Just get a hold of us at nickdeolius.com. You can ping me on Twitter. You can find me on LinkedIn, all that stuff and all those platforms. We're happy to do that. Well, our time is running out. Let's bring episode 56 to a close. I really enjoyed this one. I hope you did. It's something that I think you could tell is really exciting to me, and I view it as a huge issue. Now, I said at the start of this episode that I was torn on a dedication between two deserving choices. And we went with LT, we went Lawrence Taylor, because you can't look past the greatest ever at a position, okay? And maybe the greatest arguably ever at defense or at football in general. So it's hard to overlook Lawrence Taylor. But there was a very, very close second because it represents one of sports' most treasured records, which was set by one of sports' most iconic names. And that's what I want to wrap with for episode 56. So the record that I'm talking about, well, if you're a baseball fan, right, and I say 56, you instantly respond with 1941, Jolton Joe DiMaggio, 56 consecutive games with at least one hit. Again, one of the most coveted records in sports. I'm not sure if it's unbreakable. A lot of experts and baseball historians do feel that it is unbreakable, but I think it might actually be broken. It might be one of those records just because I just feel that with the offensive, you know, focus of baseball these days, somebody might be bound to break it. But hey, nobody's come close in decades, so you know, what do I know? I do recall Pete Rose making a run at it in 1978. I think he made it to 44 games. I was around 10 years old at the time. I recall sitting on the porch with my grandfather each night tracking Pete Rose to see whether he got a hit to extend his streak or not through that summer, that season. But DiMaggio, interestingly, he was stopped from reaching 57 games against the Indians. But after that game that he went hitless that broke his streak at 56, he then went on a 16-game streak, hitting streak after that. So if he got a hit in that game, that 57th game against the Indians, he would have amassed a 73-game hitting streak, 73 games. DiMaggio, of course, was a great on the field, but he transcended baseball. He became just sort of part of American pop culture, just a key component of it. I mean, you got Simon and Garfunkel lyrics about DiMaggio. You got Billy Joel lyrics, Madonna lyrics, John Fogerty lyrics. They all mentioned DiMaggio in different songs and hit songs. He had a celebrity marriage, of course, with Marilyn Monroe, some political intrigue with his views on the Kennedys, Mr. Coffee ads, right? I remember that as a kid when he was Mr. Coffee. He did all those advertisements on TV for Mr. Coffee. And then he's got a mention and played a role in masterpieces like The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway, of all people. So for his time, Joe DiMaggio was Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, Wayne Gretzky, Mike Trout, all wrapped into one. And what's interesting about DiMaggio and why I want to tie him into the conclusion of episode 56 with the Mentorship Academy, he started out in life as in a working poor family in the North Beach area of San Francisco, the son of immigrants. And very similar, right, to some of those students in the Mentorship Academy. And let's make sure that our young adults out there in America's urban and rural communities, they've got a shot at realizing their untapped greatness, just like DiMaggio ended up doing. So enjoy your week. Make a difference in the positive ledger that is life. Go out and do. Talk to you soon.